This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, January 8th, 2020, the second episode of Dynamite of the new year, of the new decade. From South Haven, Mississippi, I am the Solid Monster. This was their tribute to the Legends of Memphis Wrestling, at least locally. It's not really what the show is about tonight, but that was how they were promoting it. Ticket sales were very slow. I've seen varying reports that they had 2,000 people, 3,000 people in the building. Had a lot of problems getting people into the building, so they figure, why not honor the Legends of Memphis, trying to drum up interest locally in the show. A show that was by far not their best show. Not their worst show, although it seemed to be almost well on its way to being their worst show. I think the last half hour, 45 minutes... redeemed it from that, but not my favorite episode of Dynamite. We'll get into all that here in a second. Hope everybody's having a great night. If you can hear me in the chat, say hell yeah. And the Twitter poll is open for you to vote. Those of you who want to vote, thumbs up, thumbs down on the show tonight can do so on Twitter. At Solomonster is my handle. By the way, you could also vote in the NXT poll. You do for one, you got to do for the other. So if you somehow manage to watch both shows, or maybe you didn't watch Dynamite, you only watched NXT, you can vote in that poll as well. We will flash the results a little bit later on and just see what you guys thought of the shows. I see all the hell yeahs in the chat, which is good to see. That means everybody can hear me. If you are now subscribed to this channel, please hit the sub button. And of course, Super Chats are open. You'll see them flashing on your screen as they come in. So you will be shouted out. $10 or more, you get the Russo on a pole. Want to see good old Russo? That's what you got to do. So Super Chats are open. Before we get going here, though, got to transact some business. Tonight's review is sponsored by The Ridge. It is the slim wallet that fits comfortably in your pocket. Back with us for 2020. It's so good in 2019, they came back for more here in 2020. They come in several different varieties, including burnt titanium, aluminum, carbon fiber. They have forged carbon, which is pretty damn cool. The burnt titanium and carbon fiber wallets happen to be two of the most popular wallets that they offer. Two of their best sellers. I own both. I switch off between them depending on what kind of mood I'm in. After this show tonight, I probably would go with a black wallet to fit my mood. They're slim. They're not too slim, you know, that I can't fit all the cards in there that I need on me. And tons of colors. They have titanium and aluminum wallets, for example, in gunmetal, black, white, navy, gold, raw. And unlike Monday nights, theirs won't leave you disappointed. You can get it with a cash strap or a money clip. RFID blocking technology as well to protect you from identity theft. And they are backed by a lifetime warranty. So right now you can get 10% off your first Ridge wallet. Free shipping all over the world. Just go to ridge.com/solomonster and use the promo code solomonster at checkout. That's ridge.com/solomonster. Get 10% off, courtesy of the Sound Off. How about that? Courtesy of the Solemn Monster Sounds Off. All right, let's get into it here. Excalibur, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and the legendary Memphis Wrestling color commentator, Dave Brown, opened the show. Dave Brown was making, if you can believe it, his first national cable appearance here at 73 years young. He's a meteorologist in Memphis. I don't know if he still does meteorology. If he's working at the local news station, I have no idea if he's still on TV down there or not. But he's been around for decades, him and Lance Russell. In fact, Jim Ross made a comment. He said, I only wish Lance was here. And I say amen to that. What a trio. That was quite the way to open the show, I must say, to see JR, Tony Schiavone, and Dave Brown all sitting next to each other. And then you got, of course, Excalibur on the end. Dave Brown also called a match on AEW Dark before the show. That will air on YouTube next week. And they did their tribute to the Memphis Legends before the show as well. They had the Rock and Roll Express was there. Jimmy Valiant. Good old Jimmy V. Lanny Poffo was there to honor his father, Angelo Poffo. And his brother, who you may know, some guy named the Macho Man, Randy Savage. And we saw Lanny briefly. He was backstage later in the show with Alex Marvez. So that was pretty much the extent of the Memphis wrestling stuff. Let's put that on the side. Opener was Kenny Omega and Hangman Page against Private Party. And thank you to Vincent Millage, for the $5 super chat. I could not give, he says, a molecular amount of shit about the Nightmare Collective. I hope AEW dumps that shit soon and fast. The women's division is meh. Yeah, I'm going to get into my thoughts on that in a second. Me and Vincent, I think, are on the same wavelength here. The lower third on the screen for when Hangman Page came out for his entrance. I guess this is going to be the new thing now every week, where they have a different funny message. Last week, when he was doing color commentary, they had his name on the screen. And I neglected to mention this, but it said, has been drinking. Which he had, in fact, been drinking. Well, here when he came out, it said, not going to pay private party that $12. That, of course, is in reference to the drink that he stole from Private Party at the bar backstage last week. Private Party claimed that it was a $12 drink. Clearly, they have not partied here in New York. Would have at least been $14 or $15 easily. Overpriced shit. Some of these clubs. Anyway. Omega connects with a V-trigger to Isaiah Cassidy. Snapdragon to Mark Quinn. The distraction allowed Cassidy to hit Omega with a silly string for a near fall. Mark Quinn missed a shooting star press on Omega. Page went for the buckshot lariat. Quinn ducked. Omega almost got hit, but Page put on the brakes. There was another. They had a couple of spots in here. I think it was about two or three different spots where Omega and Page collided with one another, you know, accidentally. But in the end, Omega won with the one-winged angel on Mark Quinn. I thought this was a very good opener. You know, and obviously the stuff with Omega and Paige, they're furthering whatever dissension is going to lead to the inevitable blow-up between the two of them. So, I thought the match itself, though, was very good. So, when it's over, we see on the big screen, Pac is in the back, and he's got... Now, they said it was Michael Nakazawa. We never saw the guy's face. So, I can't tell you for sure who it was. I assume it must have been Nakazawa. They've talked about him on TV, being a good friend of Kenny Omega. And he was locked in the Brutalizer, and he was demanding that Kenny Omega give him his rematch. I want the rubber match, he said, or else this is going to happen every single week until I get the match that I'm looking for. So he was adamant about that. What was awkward about this, Omega is very awkwardly just standing in the ring, looking at Adam Page. He would look at the screen. He would turn, he would look at Hangman, like he didn't know what to do. Now, if I saw my friend getting murdered backstage, I sure as hell wouldn't stand there and watch. That'd make me a pretty shitty friend, don't you think? So Paige finally is like, go ahead. And Omega ran to the back. That was very awkward. That was very awkward. But again, the match itself, at least, was very good. Then we had Riho. The opposite of good. We had Riho, not Riho. Riho's good, but this match was not. Riho defending her AEW women's title against Chris Statlander. Now, this was a match that was originally supposed to take place last week. And Chris Statlander, she had better things to do. So they delayed the match by a week. They had a four-way instead, which turned out to be a very good match. In fact, I thought it was one of the best matches, women's matches, that I have seen yet. On Dynamite, on any episode of Dynamite. So this was the makeup for what they had promised us last week. Two very good wrestlers in Chris Statlander and Riho. I think people had, expectations that they would go in there and have a very good match. I think people were looking forward to it as a match. Brandi Rhodes joined the announced team for this match, not because she wanted to be there. She said she would rather be taking a nap than be there for this match. And when they asked her, well, then why are you out here if you don't want to be here? She said, well, because you invited me. And then they showed Hikaru Shida in the crowd, Britt Baker looking on, and Jim Ross said Britt Baker looked totally disinterested in this match. I love the idea that all of these people could give two shits about this title match. Brandi says, I don't want to be here. I'd rather be taking a nap. Jim Ross says Britt Baker looks completely disinterested. Maybe I should change the channel. I don't know. Why do I care so much about this match? Everybody else seems to think this match is just not worth their time. I thought that was funny. So Brandy, then she's yelling at Excalibur for wearing a mask. Why do you wear a mask to do commentary? And she was wondering if he ever took the thing off to wash it. I can't say that that's not anything I've thought of before, but that's what she was wondering. Sean Turner, thank you for the $2 super chat. Is DDP a decade late? Like Austin. Well, DDP is timeless. He's turned back the hands of time with DDPY. There's another plug for him. He had a lot of those tonight. AMJ every day also, thank you for the $2 super chat. I think AEW should hire a writer, he says, for the women. Boy, wouldn't it be a surprise if they actually did? Maybe Brandy is writing this. Maybe Brandy Rhodes is writing all this stuff for the women. Maybe that explains it. So, this match, Riho and Chris Statlander, I'm sorry to say, was not very good. And it was not very good, largely because the emphasis was not on the match. The emphasis was on the angle. This nightmare collective angle. And not the match itself. I think people were genuinely interested in seeing this match. They were not genuinely interested in watching this match for all of the Brandy Rhodes bullshit. And that had as much to do with anything as why this was a fail. Midway through, Awesome Kong and Melanie Cruz, they call her Mel, they walk down to the ring, get a closer look. Doesn't take them very long to get involved. Mel takes out Riho on the outside. Statlander takes Mel out with a suicide dive. She doesn't want their help. You remember, Statlander, the last we saw of her, she rebuffed Brandy, and she got popped in the eye with a high heel shoe. Apparently, she recovered quickly. All of a sudden, Luther appears from under the ring. Or at least, that's what Excalibur said. Jim Ross didn't seem to know what was going on. But Excalibur, he's always in the know. Right? He knew about the Butcher. He knew about the Blade. And he knew here about Luther. That being Dr. Luther. You mentioned that Luther is a Japanese deathmatch legend. And he did wrestle for the old FMW promotion in Japan. For those who don't know, he is friends with Chris Jericho. They go back to their early days coming up in Canada together. Jericho has had him on his podcast before, if you're wondering who this man is. And again, Jim Ross either didn't know who he was or didn't believe that it was him, but he said, well, we'll take Excalibur's word for it. Luther made a very brief appearance, if you'll recall, in one of the Nightmare Collective vignettes where Brandy was in a room somewhere and they had all these different people kind of as she was walking by in the background. They look like patients from a mental asylum or something. I guess Luther was one of them. And she had mentioned that he wasn't ready yet. I guess now he is. I guess now he's ready. But this whole thing went over like a fart in church because most people had no idea who he was and they didn't care about any of this. And Brandy, at one point, she left the commentary booth. She walked down to the ring and confronted Statlander. Statlander was about to clock her. That's when Luther came out from under the ring to stop her, and he got caught with a crossbody by Riho off the top. So Statlander's down on the inside. Riho goes for a double stomp, misses. Cradle Statlander for a two. Goes for a crucifix bomb. Almost got the three count there, near fall only. And Riho went for a knee strike. Statlander hit a lariat. Big Bang Theory, near fall. Awesome Kong trips up Statlander. Riho ends up retaining the championship. I thought this sucked. I really did. I mean, the match itself was okay. It was absolutely nothing special. But this whole thing, the whole Nightmare Collective thing and Luther and just the way they kind of, the match itself was just a total backdrop for an angle that I just don't care for. I hated this. This was a major letdown from what I was expecting here with this match. Part of me expected that they would factor into the finish in some way, but it just completely infected the match itself from the middle onward and just ruined the entire thing. Now, Hikaru Shida jumped the barricade. She tried to come to the aid of Riho and Statlander after the match. Britt Baker thought about it. She decided to stay right where she was. Big Swole ran down for the save. Sunny Kiss. And the Nightmare Collective retreated. This segment was a fail. I guess it accomplished what they set out to do, which was further this angle. But this was a fail. This was no good. They showed Zach Myers of Shinedown in the audience. You know, one of my favorite Shinedown songs? 45. I really like that song. That might be my favorite song of theirs, in fact. 45. I don't know. How many people in the chat know 45? Let me see all the 45s. Mr. Ian Israel sent in a $10 super chat. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that. I appreciate all the support. It says NXT was fire tonight. Sorry y'all missed it. Solo Monster is awesome sauce. Thank you, Ian. I am looking forward to catching up with NXT. That main event looked, the preview for the main event, the four-way. I can't imagine those four would have anything but a great match. Unless, of course, it's interrupted by the Nightmare Collective. Then it sucks. Sammy Guevara against Christopher Daniels of SCU. Guevara hit a Samoan drop, missed the 450. Daniels with an exploder, drop kick by Daniels, followed by a sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. Daniels goes for the Angel's wings, Guevara blocks it, hits a running knee, and the standing shooting star for a near fall. Daniels, STO, and he teases the best moonsault ever when Pentagon comes out on stage. He has a microphone in his hand, and he is daring Christopher Daniels to show him. Show me, he says. Show me. I don't know who he's talking about. Show me what? Show me the move? Show me his dick? I mean, what is he talking about? I have no idea. Excalibur, though, he on commentary talked about there being an angle from AEW Dark that I didn't see. So I have no idea what he was talking about. Meanwhile, Daniels is distracted by all of this. Sammy Guevara connects with a kick to the back of the head and gets the pin on Christopher Daniels. Evil Uno walks out with the Dark Order. See, this was a mistake. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of the Dark Order, although I appreciate the vignettes and their attempts at explaining certain things. So I think there's been effort made to make the Dark Order thing somewhat interesting. The Dark Order and the Nightmare Collective, they're too similar for me. It's just this dark aspect of both, and you do back-to-back segments with these two. You have the Nightmare Collective in one segment and the Dark Order in the next. You got to separate these two. You can't put them back to back like that. You can't do that. You can't put them back to back like that. But Evil Uno walks out. He's trying to recruit Daniels into the group. And he rebuffs their offer. So they attack him. And Frankie Kazarian comes out. Scorpio Sky comes out. The Young Bucks come out to make the save. They clear the ring. This was back-to-back angles I just didn't give a shit about. You know, maybe it's just me. This is not doing anything for me. The match itself was okay. You know, again, same as the segment before. It was just a backdrop for the angle after. Now, if it was a hot angle, a fun angle, I could excuse it. I can't say I'm into either one of these things. You know, and eventually we'll get some kind of a payoff with the Dark Order stuff. Obviously, there's some kind of higher power. Obviously, it's going somewhere. But I can't say that any of this excited me. So really, up to this point, outside of what I thought was a very good opener, I can't say that I was really impressed by this show. The show was going nowhere fast. And then we had Cody and Dustin teaming up. The Brothers Rhodes with Arn Anderson in their corner taking on the Lucha Bros. So two pairs of brothers squaring off here on this show. I love how Jim Ross openly mocks it now. Whenever somebody does a tope through the ropes, it's a joke to him. Cody did one in this match, and he said something sarcastic to the effect of, "Whoa, who'd have thunk it?" It was something like that. I thought it was funny the way he said it. I've heard him talk on his podcast or tweet about it before. I know he's not a big fan of it. I'm not a fan of it either. I've been talking about the dives for years, going back to when the Usos started doing them every match. Freaking Luke Harper would be out there doing a dive. You know, I'm sure years ago it was like, wow, look at that. It was something special. When everybody does a dive, regardless of how big or small they are, and they do multiple dives per match, it loses a little bit of its luster. So diving now means nothing. Means absolutely nothing. And in fact, every week we hear Excalibur on commentary, "Tope Suicida," to the point where his colleague is now openly mocking him whenever he says it. I thought that was funny. Phoenix grabbed a chair And he jumped up on the apron. Arn Anderson kicked the chair away. Dustin hit a spine buster. And he was crawling over to make the hot tag to Cody. And I've said it before, you know, whatever your personal opinion may be about Cody Rhodes, in front of these crowds, week after week, no matter what city they're in, they see him as one, you know, the biggest star in this company. I mean, the reactions that he gets are second to none. And they were amped up for him to get that hot tag, and finally he did. And that is when Cody hit that tope out to Pentagon. 10 punches in the corner on Phoenix, and then Cody tossed his weight belt into the crowd. Phoenix blocked a crossroads, hit a pop-up cutter. Pentagon spiked Cody down right on his head. Oof. Right on top of his head with that driver. Dustin got a tag, hit a power slam to Pentagon. Destroyer on Phoenix. And Cody hit a Cody cutter off the ropes to Pentagon. Dustin hit the final reckoning on Phoenix and got the clean pin. So clean in the middle of the ring. Dustin Rhodes pins Phoenix. What do you guys think about that? Everybody in the chat, what do you think about Dustin pinning Phoenix here in this match? I mean, you know, Cody and Dustin are positioned as two of the bigger stars in the company, so, yeah, I guess it doesn't really bother me. This seemed, I don't know, a little odd to me. I was not expecting that to be the finish. So, and as far as the match itself is concerned, I thought the match was very good. So, I will give props to them for the match. Tony Schiavone gets into the ring, and he's going to interview Cody. He wants to see if we can get a response from Cody. See if he would agree to MJF's demands from a week ago when MJF laid out the stipulations in order for Cody to get his match. Here is what would have to be done. And Schiavone was looking for answers here. So he's about to interview them. Arn Anderson interrupts. He takes the mic. He's wondering who died and made MJF God. And he said, we, as in he and Cody, are going to talk it over. They're going to talk over MJF's demands this week. So after a week, 7 days have gone by. Apparently they didn't discuss it at all. Apparently not. Either that or they're having a really difficult time figuring out what they want to do. They had an entire week and they're going to take another week to discuss things. That was lame. But it was cool though to see Arn in the ring with Tony. It just took me back, you know, when you watch the old Horsemen promos in the old NWA studio in the late 80s. In fact, one of those promos that I'm remembering, I'm pretty sure Tony Schiavone had the mic in his hand, is when Arn Anderson coined the Four Horsemen name. And here we are, I mean, what, it's over 30 years now. 30 plus years later, live television, there's Tony Schiavone, microphone in his hand, interviewing Arn Anderson. Still one of the best promos in all of wrestling. So we come back from break. Here's where things, I think at this point, probably the Cody match, but here is where things started to pick up for me. So we come back from break, and MJF is in the ring, and he's got Wardlow with him, and he's calling out Cody. He wants Cody to come on out. And Cody is not coming out, and he's doing a count, and again, nobody comes out. Jim Ross says he might not even be here, or he's in the trainer's room. He might not even be here, he said, even though we just saw him in the last segment. Did he jump in his car and drive away? Brian, thank you. $3 super chat, brother. There it is. Brian donated $3 to free Luke Harper. He said, Arn Anderson should coach the Giants or the Browns. You could add the Mets to that list, too. The Mets, the Jets, the Giants. You know, for a big media market like New York, we have some really shitty sports teams. I'd take Arn Anderson. So, anyway. It made no sense why Cody wouldn't come out, because we just saw him in the last segment. He didn't look hurt. That was kind of lame. It got even lamer, by the way, when you see what happens at the end here. So, all of a sudden, out comes Diamond Dallas Page. Cody's good friend, his mentor, DDP, comes out, big pop. He referred to MJF as Maxwell, or not Maxwell, he referred to him as Motormouth Jackoff Friedman. Nice little 5-year-old insult there. And then DDP promoted about 15 different things in the span of 2 minutes. It was actually rather impressive, I must say, how deftly he went from one plug to the next. I could learn from DDP. I'm surprised he didn't throw a link out for Rich Wallet while he was out there. So he promoted DDP Yoga, which he said is now called DDPY, and the crowd started a yoga chant. Now, DDP was smiling. I've interviewed DDP twice on my show, right? He's great. He really is. He was always great to work with, and there was some other stuff I did with him a number of years ago around Jake, and so I got to know him a little bit, but I've also heard him do interviews and such. And if you know anything about DDP, while I'm sure he was grateful for the attention here on this show and he had a smile on his face, he absolutely hates it when you call what he does yoga, which I'm sure, I haven't asked him this, but I'm sure had a lot to do with why the name changed from DDP Yoga just to DDPY. He absolutely detests it when people call it yoga. He said, it's not yoga. It's not yoga, bro. So when I heard the crowd launch a yoga chant, I just knew deep down on the inside, he was pissed. He was pissed. That's the one thing I learned. It ain't yoga, bro. It ain't yoga. Somebody didn't clue in this crowd here in Mississippi. No one told him that. But he plugged that. He plugged his Twitter handle. He plugged his Instagram handle. The absolute best part of this show was that throughout all of this, as he's going from plug to plug, the camera briefly showed MJF in the corner messing around on his phone. And he even tweeted from the ring, live as DDP was talking, 9:23 p.m. He said, will this old fart ever shut up? Just give him all the titles. Just give it to him. Just give him every championship. We don't deserve MJF. Finally, MJF had heard enough. He said Dead was, he mentioned WCW. Because DDP had said, you know, who knew that all these years later, DDP, you know, after WCW, after those days, that DDP would be live again on TNT. So MJF here says WCW is dead, which coincidentally also happens to be the average age of DDP's fans. He threatened to send DDP straight to hospice if he did not kiss his ring, his $45,000 diamond ring. And he said that he would then take his diamond daughters, because DDP has, well, I don't know how many daughters does he have. He has at least one. But he said he would take his diamond daughters, he would lay them down on his bed, and then he did the DDP hand sign, and he said, bang, before DDP grabbed him by the throat. That was awesome. That was an awesome line. So the Butcher and the Blade, the Butcher, the Blade, MJF had introduced them a few moments earlier. So they were down there, and they jumped in to stop DDP from harming MJF. And 63-year-old Diamond Dallas Page dropped the Butcher and the Blade with diamond cutters. And MJF gave him a low blow and looked into the camera. He was blaming Cody for what he was about to do to his mentor until QT Marshall. And I believe Dustin Rhodes ran down to make the save. Now, to go back to the point I made earlier about how goofy it was that Cody didn't come out, unless they said something about Cody being hurt in the match and I just didn't pick up on it. But, you know, Cody, he never came out. And now Dustin comes out. But no Cody. Now, MJF, to be fair, he did say something about Cody not being able to put his hands on him. But, you know, for him to not come out and make the save, you know, I just thought that was very strange. But I enjoyed this segment. MJF is great. This is where the show really picked up for me. I just thought, now, DDP laying out the Butcher and the Blade, I mean, as over as the diamond cutter is, it's still over. It's a great move, but, I mean, come on. I don't think they did the Butcher and the Blade any favors here, but I did enjoy this segment. This is the first segment I really, after the opener, I really did enjoy here on this show. Jose Inoua, thank you for the $5 super chat a few minutes ago. Orange Cassidy in the ring and the crowd goes wild, he says. Oh yes, that was coming up here in this next match. But first, let me just switch over for when we do calls a little bit later. There you see the number on your screen. But yes, up next was the Best Friends and Orange Cassidy against the Jurassic Express. And As always, as is the case every week when he makes an appearance, Orange Cassidy was one of the most over stars on the entire show. No matter what state, no matter what city they go to, no matter what country, no matter what galaxy, they all love Orange Cassidy. And he tagged in the middle of this match, and he delivered a pair of absolutely devastating kicks to the Luchasaurus and then a stunner. And he hit a suicide dive, tope suicida, with his hands in his pockets. And I like how when he gets in the ring and they do the thing where the best friends come in for the big group hug, they do the camera pan out like they do for the Rainmaker pose that Okada does in New Japan. Orange Cassidy is such a big star here in this company, he gets the Rainmaker camera pose treatment. Now that's big. You don't just give that to anybody. Makes me want to see makes me want to see Okada against Orange Cassidy. See, this is why we need a partnership between AEW and New Japan. That's the only reason why. We need to get ourselves an Okada-Orange Cassidy match. Or Orange Cassidy against Toriano. One or the other. Make it happen. So, the match itself, I thought, good match. Good match. We had Marco Stunt, had some time to shine. He was also very over here in this match. I think one of the announcers mentioned the hometown boy. I mean, is that true? I didn't look up where he's from. You know, if he's from Mississippi or if he's from Tennessee, then I guess he would be the hometown boy. I don't know where Marco's from, but the people were into him. He gave Chuck a flatliner and hit a destroyer. Luchasaurus tossed him onto the pile. Chucky T cut off Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy, though, hit the Rana and the Cradle for the win, and so the Jurassic Express pick up the victory. And then we ended the show with Chris Jericho coming on out with the Inner Circle, looking for an answer from Jon Moxley to the proposal that Jericho had made previously for Moxley to join the Inner Circle. If you remember, he offered him executive VP status in the group, 49% interest in he was singing a different tune tonight. He said it was a $650,000 vehicle, but before he said it was a Ford GT worth millions of dollars. Apparently it depreciated in the last 2 weeks, but that's still a lot of money. It's a little bit out of my price range, $650,000. Just a little bit. So they were looking for an answer from Moxley. I need some more Super Chats in order to afford the Ford GT. So we need to work on that. So Moxley comes out of the crowd and he said, you know, I've had a lot of time to think about your offer. And I was contemplating your offer. And I was thinking, what do I want to do? It's a big decision for me to make. And it's going on and on and on. And he's leading people to believe that he's going to say no. You know, clearly he's going to say no. Can't be bought. I came here to dominate. And then he swerved everybody and he said, my answer is yes. And he had been wearing a jacket underneath, he revealed, an Inner Circle t-shirt. And he says, there's nobody more dangerous than the Inner Circle. And I stand with the Inner Circle. And Chris Jericho said, see, I told you so. He says, Moxley said he's going to learn from the greats. Chris Jericho's the greatest of all time. He will stand with him. They're going to dominate AEW for years to come. And he goes, let's celebrate with a little bit of the bubbly. And so they start partying. They play music. You got champagne just spraying everywhere. And Moxley says to Jericho, aren't you forgetting something? And Jericho says, oh yes. And he pulls out the car keys to the Ford GT. And Jericho in here, he gave Wrestle Kingdom a shout out. He pointed out that he and Moxley both won their matches at Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome, which is true. Jericho beat Tanahashi. And Moxley, Moxley won two matches at the Tokyo Dome. He won his U.S. title back from Lance Archer, and then he beat Juice Robinson. So the AEW guys were very successful at the Tokyo Dome last weekend. I'm hoping that even just the mere mention of this was something of an olive branch. I know that Jericho wants, and he said as much after Wrestle Kingdom last weekend. He said, look, this is stupid. He goes, I'm a businessman. I think there's much to be gained by the two companies working together. People have to put their egos aside. See, Jericho knows the score. Jericho's not a dummy. He's a smart businessman. He knows the deal. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was just his idea. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to mention Wrestle Kingdom here on TNT. Yukio Rules, thank you for the $10 Russo on a poll super chat, bro. Says, this is for the Solomonster 4GT fund. 4GT fund. Well, there you go. $10, we got a ways to go. But Yukio, I'll tell you what, if we get enough super chats, since you're the one of the first ones here, you get to ride. I'll sit in the passenger side and I'll let you ride for about 5 minutes. How about that? We'll find a parking lot somewhere, an empty parking lot, and we'll drive around. So as the Inner Circle is celebrating, they start to leave the ring, and Moxley says, "Hey, wait a minute, Jericho. There's one more thing," because I forgot to tell you. I'm just kidding. And then he broke a bottle of champagne, or it was a glass, I think, of champagne over Jericho's head. Of course, he was kidding. He's not joining the Inner Circle, and I think he beat up Sammy. He bailed through the crowd, but he was sure to take the car keys with him because he's a smart dude. He's no dummy. He's no dummy. He's got keys to a $650,000 car. He's going to take it with him. So I enjoyed the last segment. I thought the MJF segment was the best thing on the entire show. Some of the matches were good. I was not impressed by a lot of what I saw in that first hour outside of the opener, though. I thought the stuff they did in that Riho and Statlander match was just awful. I hated that segment. They ruined that match. That should have been a really good match, even if it had a fuck finish or whatever. I did not like anything about that segment. I really did not. And I can't say I enjoyed the segment that came after it either. So those were the definite low points for me on this show, but it picked up enough at the end that I would say, you know, I'd give this week's show, you know, an average rating, average to good at best. I would not go higher than that. Not only was this not my favorite episode of Dynamite, this might have been one of the ones I enjoyed the least, outside of a few of the angles they did really in hour two. I'm sorry to say. Bash at the Beach is next week. That is the Bash at the Beach episode of Dynamite with Pac taking on Darby Allin. Chris Statlander is going to be tagging with Riho to take on Awesome Kong and Mel. And Dustin Rhodes is going to be tagging with QT Marshall and Diamond Dallas Page. DDP. It seems kind of anticlimactic, doesn't it? I mean, DDP has not wrestled a match in how many years? It's been a while. And his big return is announced just almost in passing as part of a six-man tag. But it's been a long time since DDP has wrestled an official match, and he had said before, I think he wasn't never going to wrestle again, and here he is, and he'll be in this match, climbing back into the ring, taking on MJF, and The Butcher, and The Blade. So that's the match next week. Then the week after that, they're taping Dynamite on the Tuesday before. So that is, what day is that? January 21st? Whatever that Tuesday is. They're taping Dynamite from aboard the Chris Jericho Rockin' Rager in the Bahamas with a match including Jericho, Santana, and Ortiz of the Inner Circle taking on the Jurassic Express. I will be on that cruise, so I'll probably be at the show. I have to find out what the protocol is and how this even works, if you have to get there early enough or if you get shut out. I mean, I'm on the frickin' cruise, so it's the day that we dock in the Bahamas. It's the one day in the Bahamas that we have. So I think I just got an email today saying that it's recommended that everybody be back at the ship no later than 6 o'clock. Either 6 o'clock or 6:30. Because they're going to be taping Dynamite. So I don't know, if I don't get back there at 6 o'clock, do I get shut out? Am I not allowed to be there for the show? I have no idea. I hope to be there for the show. And the thing is, though, there will be no Dynamite stream in 2 weeks. There's no way I'm going to be able to stream live from this ship. I've already been warned. The Wi-Fi is shit. And frankly, whether it is or it isn't, I'm just not going to be able to go live. So just be aware of that. In 2 weeks, there will be no Dynamite stream. Oofman Rules, thank you for the $10 super chat on a poll, bro. He says, will I see in the building at the same time both the Solomonster and Orange Cassidy at the Prudential Center in Jersey in March? That's right. AEW is coming to Newark. And you will not find me in Newark. So the answer is no. I will not be there. Brian, thank you for the $2 super chat. Do you see Hiroshi Tanahashi going to AEW soon? No. No, I do not. Look, all of that hinges on whether or not they can work together. Obviously, they have a lot of issues to work through. Now, I'm doing the prediction show this weekend. For those of you who have asked me, episode 634 this Sunday of the Sound Off will in part be my annual prediction show. So I'll give one prediction away right now. I do believe that the two companies will work together before this year is over. I just think it's inevitable. I think there's too much, there's just too many reasons why it makes sense for them to work together. But I think it's going to take a while. I think it'll happen probably in the later half of the year. But I do think at some point in 2020, there will be some kind of working relationship, something more formal between AEW and New Japan. But no, Tanahashi is not Tanahashi's not going anywhere. Tanahashi is not going to AEW. The phone number is on your screen right now. There you see it. 989-282-SOLO. 989-282-7656. Before we get to any of that, I'm very curious what people thought about this show this week, because I really did not think this was a great show. And I want to see if the poll reflects that. So let's go to the AEW poll first, and then we'll take a look at the NXT poll. And we'll take a look here what you guys thought. So here's the AEW poll. 63.6% thumbs up to 36.4% thumbs down. So that is still easily a you know, thumbs up overall rating for Dynamite, but that is probably the weakest thumbs up I have seen yet for the show. Usually I would say it hovers around 75 to 80% or 70 to 75. 63 is pretty damn low, actually, for an AEW show. So that's with 1,300 votes in already. That is a thumbs up, but I would call that kind of a weak thumbs up. Now let's take a look at NXT. And NXT just blows them away. I mean, 77%, almost 78% thumbs up, 22% thumbs down. That's with fewer votes. 700 votes only so far. But I just put the poll up about 40 minutes ago. So it'll take some time to populate. But so far, NXT by far, according to you guys, is the winner of the night. I have not watched NXT yet. I will be doing so tomorrow. But if you did see both shows in the chat, chime in. Let me know what you thought. But those are the poll numbers so far. And with that being said, let me take a look. Now, we had a listener of the podcast was going to be at the show tonight. And actually, hold on a second here. We got a lot of action going on in the chat. A lot of activity here. But we had somebody who was going to be live at the show tonight. And I'm just waiting to see. I don't know if I don't see his call yet. But if he calls in, we'll take his call. Andrew said he was going to be in the building. So if he should call in, we'll be able to get his live perspective. But you see the number on your screen. Let's go to some of your calls here. Start with 502. Actually, I wonder if this might be him. 502, you're on the air.
Hey, Solid Monster.
Hey, who am I talking to?
You're talking to Mike from Louisville, Kentucky.
All right, Mike. It's definitely not Andrew, but how you doing tonight? What'd you think of the show?
I'm good. First time caller, actually. I've heard your videos for well over a year, and it's my first time calling in, so I'm glad I'm in.
Awesome. I'm glad to have you on.
All right. The show, just like you, the – oh, man. I mean, this company's weakest spot is the women's division, and I hate saying that because I think all of the women are talented. But I really do think that with Chris Statlander, now she should have showed up for work last week, so I think that they're actually punished her this week for not showing up to work and going to base wrestling or whatever it was that she had a commitment to. But outside of that, you know, her not winning, who else is there? You know, I was on board with Britt Baker before, but since Chris Statlander defeated her, you know, I'm kind of thinking, who is left? Now, I know they have Jazz, who's formerly known as Jazz in WWE, They got Roddy
Well,
Piper's
wait a minute though.
daughter.
Wait, hold on. Where has I have not seen Jazz. I mean, I think she might have been in a battle royal, but I don't. Is Jazz under contract to AEW?
I don't know on contract, but she was in the Battle Royal, so I just assumed at that time that maybe she was a signee.
Yeah, I don't think she
But
is.
again, I'm not sure. But that match tonight was horrible. That was their, the women's division is their weakest spot. Now, to me personally, Kong is the only thing that saves all of this. Just Kong being there and her presence is what saves it all. Now, not saying that she's a standout, but just her being there saves the entire division from just being, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Their women's division is really the weak point of the show. And part of it is just it's these storylines, it's the writing, it's the fact that I think they could still afford to feature more women on the show. If you look at on paper the women they have, they actually have quite a few. We don't get to see all of them, but this whole Nightmare Collective thing is just so far to me anyway. The whole thing is a bust, and since all of this is based around the Nightmare Collective, it kind of drags everything else down.
Well, where exactly do you think they're going with the Nightmare Collective? Now, I know what they're going with the Dark Order, or I think I know where they're going, but the Nightmare Collective, outside of it being a ripoff of the Straight Edge Society, I do not know where they're going with it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, we'll see. I just wish I had more interest in this because I kind of don't care. So. But again, if it's clearly positioned as one of the big stories on the show, and so we've got to just wait and see. I would be fine if they just sort of wrapped it up and moved on from here, because I've just not been impressed by any of that stuff. Look, it's just weird because they've had Cody and Brandy come out together before, and all of a sudden it's like, well, Brandy needs her own story, so we'll make her really evil and really sinister, and it doesn't work. It's just there's a disconnect there. It's just weird. It's just very weird.
She doesn't need it. Yeah,
Yeah.
that was a mistake. She does not need her own program. I like them both together, but
Yeah.
who am I?
Yeah, no, I no, I agree. I agree. Anything else before I let you go?
No, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling, and I appreciate it. Let's go to, let's see here. We got a lot of people trying in here. Let's go to Colorado, area code 970.
Hey, Jason, what's up?
What's going on?
Not much, man. It seems to be last week. I'm kind of falling off. It's not really what I expected it to be. Like the Nightmare Collective, that's like an 11 TNA stuff. The Dark Order is like a Giant of Doom. I'm kind of falling off the whole AEW thing.
Yeah, part of the problem is they kind of marketed themselves around being this alternative from WWE, right? And they marketed themselves as going to be more sports-like, and you're going to have all these great athletes on the roster. And look, you can't just have match, match, match. You got to have some kind of angles to wrap them around. I get that, but this stuff just reeks of some of the worst like creative shit you'd see from WWE, where they do this really hokey sports entertainment bullshit. Or like you mentioned, some of the stuff TNA used to do, or the Dungeon of Doom crap in WCW, it doesn't fit. I mean, this is not what people I think were expecting when they were looking for some kind of real alternative from WWE.
Yeah, I agree. Just my question is, with like the whatever their name is, the Nightmare Collective. Do you think like it's not like in WWE where you can't say anything to be on TV because it's Vince's daughter. Kenny doesn't have as much power as Cody does. Do you think one of them would step up and say this is bad stuff? Or I mean, I don't know what their friendship is like, but what do you think?
Well, the friendship between who? You cut out there a little bit.
Kenny, the Bucks and.
Oh, as far as their friend, like how solid is their friendship?
Yeah, like I don't know if I cut out before just asking, do you think like one of them would step up and say, hey, this time our collective is, I know it's your wife, but we need
Yeah.
to take this off.
Yeah. See, and I've heard some things about this, and again, I don't know what's true and what's not. It's a tough situation to be in because, like you said, it's Cody's wife. So if you're Kenny Omega or one of the Bucks, and if you honestly, and I don't know what their thoughts are on the Nightmare Collective stuff, but you would think one of them would look at it and go, yeah, this stuff really isn't that good. What do? I mean, you feel comfortable piping up if that's how you feel and saying, hey, listen, guys, this kind of sucks. We ought to move away from it and do something else. Or do you stay silent because it's Cody's wife and you don't want to speak out of turn, and all of a sudden it kind of gets a little awkward. So, and I've heard differing things about this, but yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I don't know what Kenny Omega thinks about it. I don't know what Matt Jackson thinks about it. Maybe it was Matt Jackson's idea. Who knows? But I could see where that could make for a very awkward conversation to have, because this is what happens when you have all these executive VPs. They all have power, right? You get to be EVP. You get to be EVP, and they all share power in this company. And so if there's an idea that somebody doesn't like, you know, are you going to offend the other person by being honest and saying, hey, this doesn't work? Or this is too hokey, or this is shit. This doesn't work. Let's move on. Let's try something else. I don't know. Politically, that could be a little bit of a dicey situation there. Let's take a gander at the messages here. Now, I see Andrew, the $5 super chat. Now, he said he was trying to call in, and he was having some issues with one of the numbers that I gave him. So we'll try to work that out. Andrew, if you can hear me, just try calling under your cell, because I have your number here. So if I see your number, I'll recognize it. I'll put you through, buddy, all right? So I'll watch for you if you can get through. I'm sorry about that. Let's go to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., area code 202. You're on the air.
Hey, Solid Monster. It's Garrett once again calling in.
Oh, it's Garrett, alive and well. How you doing?
Well, I felt alive and well until I, you know, started watching tonight's show, because I would say tonight was probably the most polarizing Dynamite show I've watched. I mean, they had the best hits with, you know, the Elite, you know, the Lucha Brothers, Orange Cassidy, the Lucha Express. God, it's a Jungle Express.
That's right.
But also had the worst things, like the Butcher, the Blade, and you had the Dark Order. Then you had probably, I consider to be, the worst booked finishes or the worst booked matches in AEW, with the AEW women's title match. As far as, like, the reveal, it could have worked. I'm trying to stay positive on this, you know, situation. I thought it would have been cool if they, like, hold it off, like, a few months. And if it was, like, you know, instead of, like, you know, Chris Jericho's best man coming out of the ring, it could have been like Luke Harper or like Brody Lee coming out revealing to be siding with Brandy. That would have gotten, you know, a great crowd reaction. You know, when you have someone who only Chris Jericho and Excalibur knows, the crowd would be flat out dead for it. And I just think that, you know, when it comes back to like the Brandy situation, the fact that, oh, how can they, you know, talk about how this is not working out? It was working originally, in my opinion, when she was like this baby face who she felt like when she was a skater, you know, she felt the pressures of not being able to perform.
Right. And, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying though. What she's doing now, like people turn and all that, but like what she's doing now is such a departure from what she was doing before. And I don't just mean walking out there and smiling as Cody's wife, but they were trying to make her more human. And, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be a skater and it didn't work out. And she was all emotional. And then they just turned her heel. And now she's this, like, dark, sinister character. It's like, well, where is this coming from? It came out of left field totally. And it just felt forced and just completely hokey and completely unlike anything they were doing with her before. So that's part of the reason why I think it's just hard to buy into all this.
It's a kind of a similar situation with the Bunny situation, where you had Allie, who was, you know, blonde. It's like one of those white meat baby faces in the women's division. And the next week she's coming out of the ring as a demon bunny within pretty much in her AEW debut, which, again, there was like no build up, no warning to this. And, you know, with all like being the Elite, they could have like had more time to develop such character development. But then all of this came out of left field for the audience, which I think, you know, are pretty crucial things too. But then again, when it comes to Nightmare Collective, I get like the welcoming committee flashbacks from SmackDown back in 2017, which I do not want to be reminded of anymore.
Oh boy.
But besides that, I felt like you know, there was some good tag matches on the show, but again, I consider this is probably a polarizing show in my book. But now for the All Elite Wrestling and New Japan, I think it will never happen. Considering the fact that New Japan said we will willingly walk out of our TV deal instead of working with Impact, what they did, I'm really sure they're going to say the same thing for AEW for long term, which I think it's pretty, like Chris Jericho's perspective, I mean, and that makes no business sense in my opinion. But, wrestling companies.
Yeah, but again, I don't know if I would say they willingly walked out of their television deal. I'm not sure that they, it seemed like that was a risk they were taking, I guess, but I'm not sure they knew or they thought that that would happen just because it seemed like they thought they had another year. So maybe if they say, well, listen, we're not interested in working together, they may have thought, all right, well, in 2021, we're not going to have TV. We have at least a year to figure out what our next move is going to be. I don't know that they did that. They said that or rebuffed their offer, if an offer was made, expecting that they would be taken off TV this soon. So I wouldn't say they willingly gave up their television. I'm not quite sure it worked out that way. But all right, I mean, look, there's different opinions on whether or not there will ever be an actual working relationship between the two sides. Maybe there won't be. I think there should be. They're not doing anything with Ring of Honor right now. I keep hearing, oh, they're so loyal to Ring of Honor. What was the last thing they did with Ring of Honor? Ring of Honor was not represented at Wrestle Kingdom. In past years, there's been a Ring of Honor match, a Ring of Honor championship match. There was none of that. They really haven't done much of anything with Ring of Honor since the Madison Square Garden show, and that was almost a year ago. So it seems like they've got one foot out the door as far as that relationship goes. I just think there's things to be gained by both sides. Now, I do believe that we have our caller here. Is this Andrew?
Yes, Jason. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. It's good to talk to you and finally get you on the show.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what the deal was, but just glad to get on the show. It was a fun night in South Haven. Dark Order and Mid Nightmares, whatever they call that, aside. So,
I accidentally called it the Collective Nightmare last week, and then I stopped myself and I said, you know what, that might be a more appropriate name for them.
Yeah, it's just bad. They got to hit the reset on that or do something, because it's just, as soon as they came out, the whole crowd just dropped. They wanted to see a title change tonight. I think everybody kind of thought, it's been a while, this might be a good night for a title change. And then when the Brandy's faction came out, the whole crowd just kind of dipped. It was in the building. The center there holds about 10,000 there in South Haven. They had the whole upper deck was cordoned off, so they probably had 5,000 or so seats for sale, 4,000 to 5,000, and it was about 2/3 full downstairs in the Lander Center.
Yeah, I had heard,
but the crowd was.
Yeah, I had heard different things. I mean, I've heard figures as low as 2,000. I've heard between 3,000 and 4,000, but it didn't seem like they filled up whatever seats were available there.
No, and they, I didn't quite realize how expensive their TV tapings were. They had a lot of up close VIP seats that were anywhere from $400 to $700, per seat, and it gave you all sorts of backstage access. I did not purchase one of those seats, but there it was a strong crowd in terms of like attitude and wanting to be into things. But it just, it was not, I think, what they probably wanted loading up the show, the pre-show with all the legends there from Memphis.
Well, talk a little bit about that, because we didn't get to see that on the show. So apparently before the show went on the air, I think they had Dave Brown calling one of the matches on AEW Dark. And apparently they did whatever kind of Memphis tribute stuff they had planned, I think, with the Rock and Roll Express and Jimmy Valiant. That happened, I think, during Dark. So what happened there?
It happened about it started about 30 minutes before the show started. There was a brief dark match before I got there. I missed that, but they were announcing all the names. There was Jimmy Valiant and the Rock and Roll Express and several others, and one of the Profos. And so there was a lot of that, and the crowd was popping for that especially. And they showed them regularly, even when the TV feed went to break, they would put them up on the screen. They would look at them a little bit, and there was two or three moments when people came out that, of course, they walked up to them, particularly the Rock and Roll Express, and made sure to, I think MJF flipped them off at one point there. But so they did try to hype it up. And also here right around Memphis last 2 days, Cody and Brandy have been everywhere, and so have the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks super kicked a T-Wolves fan at the Grizzlies game last night. Brandy and Cody have been on every radio show and every network in town. They were really, really, really trying to hype this up, but it just, in terms of attendance, it just didn't quite work out, even with the legends.
What would you say was the most over or successful segment on the show? I mean, I enjoyed the MJF segment the most personally, but in the building, I mean, what got over the most?
In the building, the most, the thing that got over the most, I'd rank them 3-1. Three was when Kenny Omega came out. When Kenny came out, that was massive pop, and particularly then when they won and finished off Private Party, that was there was a big pop in the room, and that everybody seemed to enjoy that. The second was at the end of the night with Moxley turning back on Jericho. That got a big pop, but the entrance and everything for Cody, it had, as you said earlier, it had the biggest of the night there in the building too. It was just noticeably bigger than anything else throughout the evening.
Cool. So any other, I'd say, key observations from the show tonight to kind of just summarize? I mean, overall, your experience. I mean, I assume this was your first AEW event. And so what did you think? Or maybe it wasn't, but what did you think overall of the show?
Overall, I mean, the show was good. It wasn't as good as some of the other ones I've seen that they've been doing. I think they were weighted down by those two more dark segments. And, you know, it just slowed the show down and didn't feel right. We're also spoiled, as much as sometimes we complain about it, we're also spoiled by the production value of WWE. And their production value, I can't speak to the sound over TV tonight, but their production value is very good. And it was, they were on point with everything. I've been to other events there at Lander Center, and this was very, very well done. And they had their stuff together. I mean, in terms of their producing and in terms of their design. I'm looking forward to going to another show. I'll be curious to see how they continue to do. But I do hope they do a little bit more drawing interest, because as fun as the show was for the most part, it was pretty much hardcore fans. I did see some kids, but it was mostly people my age in their 30s or older. I think that's a good thing in terms of them helping build revenue, but not necessarily a good thing long term in building a broader fan base.
Yeah, I would agree. And I wonder, again, part of that was the real push these last couple of weeks was the Legends of Memphis Wrestling. And so that's going to attract an older audience. I mean, really, if you think about it, they're targeting people in their 40s and 50s and older, you know, for something like that. So,
well, and the Legend of Memphis Wrestling, both of those who are still living were not there, neither Jerry Lawler nor the Honky Tonk Man. So, so it's kind of Legends of Memphis Wrestling minus probably the two living most famous ones, you know, who are still signed with WWE. So.
Now, would hockey really, I mean, you would probably know better because you're closer to that area than I am, but, I mean, is he really considered that big of a Memphis wrestling legend? I mean, do you think?
Everybody in this area would know him and would come out for him. He's a very big deal. Not as big as Jerry Lawler is, nor as big as Jackie Fargo was, but Lawler and Honky Tonk, you know, would have popped probably a little bit bigger of a crowd.
Awesome. Well, thank
and
you.
Lawler, and Lawler every Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay.
And Lawler every couple of years will come to the Grizzlies games and do various things and do little spots.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The crowd always just goes
seen,
crazy.
I've seen footage of Lawler giving a pile driver to the mascot.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's like, he's obviously very revered down there. I think, I don't know if it's still open or not. I know he had a restaurant, I think, on Beale Street or something. And, you know, he
does.
Yeah, people see him in town driving his Batmobile around from time to time. I mean, he's Teflon down there.
Yeah. But, no, it was a good show overall, but you're right. I mean, those two main segments, those two segments in the middle just dragged the whole thing down and really kind of soured a lot of the show. So.
Awesome. Always good to get the live perspective. So I know you and I talked. I was going to try to get you on. I'm glad you were able to. I don't know what happened with the pin code or whatever, but I took down your cell number just in case, because I thought if something happens, at least I'll be able to recognize the numbers. So I'm glad you're able to get through.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you for taking my call tonight, Jason.
All right,
I always love listening to Sound Off, and you do a lot of good work.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Take care. So that was Andrew. He was at the show tonight. As I said to him, always good to get the live perspective. It pretty much is in line with what I was talking about in terms of the crowd reaction to some of those segments. And the whole Legends of Memphis thing was, you know, it was a marketing thing because they just weren't selling tickets. I mean, this has been the story now for a few weeks. They were really having trouble selling tickets in that area. And this was their way of trying to do that. And I'm sure they sold some extra tickets, but it doesn't sound like they had... one of their bigger, you know, one of their bigger crowds there tonight. Let's go to, is this Ian 803?
Hi, yes, it is.
How are you? I you see, you didn't think I saw your message in the chat, but I did.
definitely appreciate it. Thank you for taking me and having me on tonight.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. So, what did you think of this this Dynamite show tonight?
A very decent show. You know, I fall into that 18 to 40 demographic. I'm a 21 college student here at USC. It's been a show that I definitely wanted to give a shot, and you know, it started off really strong tonight. Strong opener with Kenny Omega, Hangman Page versus Private Party. I'm a huge Private Party mark. Anytime I see those guys in the ring, I'm always happy to. You know, just root for those guys. A very strong opener and a very strong closing. Just a lot of weak filler stuff in between. Believe it or not, I don't mind the Butcher and the Blade too much. Kind of interesting to see what they did with Diamond Dallas Page, but and also I guess going off of what some people said earlier with the women stuff with Rio and Statlander. I'm not in too big of a rush to see the title come off of Rio. I believe she should have kind of been in that David versus Goliath role with, I guess, Rio versus, I'm sorry, Nyla Rose. I believe that's something that probably should have happened a little bit later down the line. But just a very, just kind of an awkward position of where the women division is now. I guess you would kind of expect for it to be so much better, but it's just really struggled just to really get off the ground. But overall, I mean, I thought it was a somewhat decent show. It definitely could have been better.
All right. Any other thoughts on the show tonight before I let you go?
No, sir. No. I guess other than, you know, just watching the show, AEW, you know, for the past few months and just, you know, NXT as well. You can definitely, you know, just see just a difference in between, I guess quality. I would say, you know, AEW, I think they put more emphasis on in-ring work than in-ring character development. And I think that's the number one factor that's really just kind of crippling AEW right now when it comes to the ratings and just overall, it's as far as just being a really viable alternative.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, look, it's not a perfect show. Yeah, I know some AEW fans don't want to hear that because they could do no wrong. But the way I look at it is this. If you're going to criticize WWE, now WWE has been doing this a lot longer, so they really don't have any excuse for some of the things they do. You would think they would learn from their past mistakes, and they never seem to. But AEW, if they, you know, trip up and they do something that deserves to be called out, you got to call them out on it. You know, you can't just say, well, you know, AEW, you know, they're a competitor to WWE. You got to you got to support them, and you've got to, you know, yeah, it's fine to support them, but look, you know, when I see something that's no good, I'm going to call it out, and I'm going to let people know that I didn't think it was any good. I don't think it should be held to a different standard. I know maybe there are some other people or podcasters or whoever who maybe feel differently, and that's why they do what they do, and I do what I do. And some people don't like hearing that, but that's just the way it is. So, but it seems like a lot of the feedback I'm hearing, including from you, I mean, we all seem to be pretty much in agreement on what the weak stuff was on the show tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, sir.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you for the call. I'm glad I was able to get you on, and I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night. All right, let's. Why don't we take? We'll take one or two more, and we'll. We have some good calls tonight. We'll wrap this up here in a second. We got a few more people who have been waiting here. So let's go to area code 850. You're on the air.
Hey, Solid Monster. This is Christopher Mace. My question for you is a kind of an interesting one, though, too. So, since AEW and New Japan are not quite sure whether they are or aren't going to have a working relationship, do you see in the future Jon Moxley actually defending the IWGP United States Championship first, or do you see AEW actually finally getting a mid-card title, giving the other male wrestler something to compete for that might bring a little more entertainment to the show, get rid of some of those horrible segments that we got tonight's show, and do something different, have a men's mid-card title so they have something else to compete for besides the AEW Championship?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that they're going to have a mid-card title. I think I said this a few weeks ago. I don't think it's anything that's going to be introduced in these next few months, but I think by the middle or later part of the year, they almost have to, especially if they expand the roster, if they bring in some new names. Maybe, look, there's going to be some WWE contracts coming up in the middle of this year. And so as they bring in more people, and there's only so many people at once who could be fighting for the AEW title, I think they're going to need some kind of a mid-card title. Now, whether they call it a television title, if they come up with some other name for it, yes, I do think it is inevitable. I don't think Moxley is going to defend his IWGP title, you know, the U.S. title on Dynamite. Again, that would be predicated on some kind of a working agreement. And even if there was, that doesn't necessarily mean defending New Japan belts. Because really, to the AEW audience, I'm not sure how much that's even going to mean. But no, I don't see that happening, but yes, at some point I think they're going to have to introduce some kind of secondary, championship for the men's division. Let's go to, let's see here. This guy's been waiting a while. Area code 586. You're on the air.
Hey Jason, my name's Daryl from St. Clair Shores, Michigan. And, I've been a long time listener of the podcast and it's a real honor to talk to you, man. I really appreciate the show.
Thanks, Daryl. I appreciate that.
So I want to tell you, I've been like watching AEW from day one on TNT. I record every show, but I usually watch them live. My kids love, I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old and they go crazy for the Jurassic Express. Like I'm having a lot of fun with it and I want it to be so good. But there's some things that are just bothering me that are making me feel like, I don't know if I'm really like wasting my time because WWE, I'm just so like burned by them all the time. So it doesn't feel different when they, you know, make me feel like garbage watching it. But, you know, from the 50-50 booking to the super moves in every match, you know, to the near falls in every match, you know, you got Kenny Omega tonight. And, oh my God, how am I forgetting his name?
Hangman.
I'm blanking out here. Hangman. Sorry about that. I like him a lot. You know, that match, you have Private Party who are so green as grass. They are garbage. Like, I watched their matches, and the guy with the tails walks back and forth punching when there's two guys in the ring. He's supposed to go back and forth punching, and he walks. It's embarrassing. Like, there's no, everything has a 5-minute setup. And Kenny Omega stood there one time and just stared at him while they were setting up one of their flips. And I'm just like, these guys, they go toe-to-toe with two guys who I'm supposed to believe are your top guys. Like, everyone's having, like, matches with loser mid-carders, and they're having 50-50 matches with these people. Like, it's got to stop with your top guys. Like, and it just like, Britt Baker is a perfect example where, you know, you have someone who I'm supposed to believe is going to be a top girl, you know, top guys for the girls. She comes in with a lot. She goes to the finals in the tournament. And then she's losing every week to these rando people who you meet for the first time. and you're using her as the fodder? Like, Cody does not know how to run a wrestling company. Like, I'm sorry. Like, there's a lot of garbage on AEW right now. Like, there's no reason for anyone who doesn't know these guys prior to have any idea who the best people are unless they have a belt.
Well, I will say this.
And it's just like WWE. It's,
yeah. Well, let me cut you off. So I will say
this. Sorry, I'm a little long-winded. I apologize.
No, that's fine. But the Kenny Omega point. Kenny Omega, I don't know that anybody could disagree with this. So some people might. Kenny Omega is not a bigger star now than he was a year ago. So a year ago, he had just lost the IWGP title. And there was a lot of question about what's he going to do. Is he going to go to WWE because they made him an offer? Is he going to sign with AEW? And it was around this time that the announcement was made. Actually, I think it was the beginning of February, that he was going to go to All Elite. And it's been a year, just about. He is not as big.
I was actually really happy too about that.
Yeah. Well, look, a lot of people were worried about what would happen if he signed with WWE. Don't go there. A lot of people felt that way. Even though he said it's been a dream of his to one day have a WrestleMania match against AJ Styles. And now there's a chance that may never happen. Here we are a year later. I think it's safe to say Kenny Omega does not feel like nearly as big of a star now as he did a year ago. And part of that is the fact that he has not been, I don't want to say he hasn't been positioned as a top name because that's not entirely true. But I do think when you have him in there with people, you do have to protect him. Should he be out there in tag matches for every week like this? No, that's not what I would be doing with him. I would be building around him the way they're doing things with Cody. And Cody, it's worked masterfully because he comes out, he comes across as the biggest star on that entire roster. That should have been Kenny Omega, though. Or at least Kenny Omega should be on the same level.
All right.
So I actually agree with you in that Omega feels like less of a star now. He feels like less of a big deal than he did a year ago. I do think part of that is the fact that he's now on weekly television. And so when he was just doing those big New Japan matches, he wasn't on television every week. There is something to be said right about the Brock Lesnar stuff, where when you're not around every week, there's a reason why Brock still, you know, some people may say he's not as special, but when Brock comes out, there's still a specialness about him. And the biggest reason for that, there's two reasons. Number one, he never loses. Number two, he's almost never there. So, of course, right, he's going to feel special. Omega should have some of that aura. He really doesn't. And I agree with you. At least on him. I would not say Private Party is not garbage. I do agree with you that they are still very green. They're still very new to the business. They're still very young. I called, you know,
it's apparent.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't know them well. I don't know them a lot on a personal level. I met them a few times, you know, in House of Glory, which is really where they came up. So I got to call some of their early matches and stuff, and they were standouts from day one. But they still are relatively inexperienced. They're not the only ones I've seen do this before, where they're setting up a move and the other guy just stands there and waits. I hate that too, but they're not the only ones that do that.
Yeah,
so
I wouldn't
put that all on them. I just think garbage is a little hard. I get the bigger point.
It's my personal opinion.
No, I agree. But I see the bigger point that you're making. I could see why that would bother you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like with the way Jim Ross talks about the topes. I love that, you know, that was brought up. Because, like, you know, it's just, if every match is a ring of, like, when I go to a Ring of Honor house show, and every match is like a 25-minute, everyone's kicking out of finishers, and, like, everything is a super move, and, like, nothing, there's no, every match is like the same tone. And I just really don't see how they're differentiating themselves from WWE. And it's just been a bummer. And I'm really rooting for them. Like, I honestly am, like, truly, I'm not complaining just to be a prick. There's tons of good stuff. I just, you know, I don't want to bore you with it. So
no, that's fine. look, everybody's got different opinions on these things. I think some of that is valid. The thing about Omega is what stands out to me. We were so used to seeing him have these special matches every few months against these elite caliber, no pun intended, these elite caliber wrestlers that they had over there in New Japan. And then
he those cool outfits.
Yeah, the unique entrances.
He had a lot of he had a lot of moxie in his outfits, and when he came out, he held his arm out with a gun. Like, it's all gone.
Yeah. Now he was there was a specialness about him that they're going to have to work to get that back, and maybe this year it'll happen, because I think things are set up where if Moxley were to win the championship, you know, he beat Omega in their last match. I wouldn't do it right away, but maybe around All Out in August, you know, they can come back. They can build Omega back up to that level. He could be, you know, win the championship, since Cody in storyline can't wrestle for the title. I think that you build up Omega and get him back to that level, because right now,
yeah, I hope so.
It's just there's something missing there, you know, and doing yeah. tag team matches every week, I don't think helps.
Yeah, and they can get the rules on those tag matches where, like, I don't understand, by the way, how people just get to go in, do a move, the other guy can't come in, and then he walks out. It's, like, weird. They don't tag to do it. Like, there's a lot of weirdness going on with these tag matches. They got to clean it up really quickly because it just looks like a mess. But
thank you for the
call,
brother.
There's a lot to like. Sorry for being so negative. So thanks a lot, man. I hope you have
fine.
A great night, sir.
That's fine. You too, my friend. No, that's – believe me, you don't have to apologize. That's fine. And
you take care.
All right, you too. Now, look, it's good to have this – I wouldn't call Private Party garbage. I think that's going too far. But, yeah, the other stuff, he makes valid points. He makes some valid points. And the thing about Omega has stood out to me a lot recently. You know, when he comes out, people cheer for him. It's not like he's a jobber or anything like that. And somebody in the chat before said, well, he's doing what he wants to do. He has the power and the freedom now to do what he loves to do. So if this is what he's doing, maybe it's his idea. I'm not saying it's not his idea. I'm sure he has more freedom in AEW than he would have if he signed with Vince McMahon last year. And, you know, he's had a hand in bringing in some of the Joshi wrestlers and, you know, the relationship he has with Riho and all that. So maybe he's as happy as he's ever been and he's living his best life. I don't know. All I'm saying is the perception of him from this fan watching him on TV is very different now than it would have been a year ago when he was the champion or fighting for the title in New Japan, having these unbelievable matches with Okada and Tanahashi and not just those two either, you know, Ibushi and all these other people that he was matched up with and in the G1, it's just different. You know, now he's on television every week and now he's wrestling in tag team matches and, you know, it's just different. He just doesn't feel as big, I think, as he should. But they have time to change that, right? He's not in the title picture right now. He's got his little side angle going on with Hangman Page. They're doing the tag team thing. He's doing tag matches with the Young Bucks. He's kind of phased out of the picture right now to put more focus on what's going on with Jericho and Moxley. But you got to be careful here. And even Jericho. Jericho's a very selfless person when it comes to the way that he has put over other people in his career. The Rock was like that. The Rock was a huge star, and The Rock, I would even say The Rock probably lost more than he should have. There was a certain selflessness about him that clearly there were other people on that roster in WWE who were a lot more selfish than people like Rock and Jericho or Foley, who wanted to help put other people over. You know, every time Jericho would come back in WWE, he was putting other people over. And then he knew enough to say, listen, I got to win some matches too. I can go to WrestleMania and lose the fucking Fandango if you want me to. What a flop that turned out to be. But he was smart enough to say, look, I got to win some matches here too. You can't just have me losing all the time. Because then what the hell does it mean? What is wrestling Chris Jericho or beating Chris Jericho even mean if people like Fandango are going in there and they're beating me? Maybe Omega needs to be a little more selfish and a little less selfless. That's all I'm saying. Let's wrap things up here. There's some good calls tonight. Maybe the best night of calls we've had yet. So thank you for everybody who did call in, everybody who's been knocking it out of the park in the chat, all the activity we've had in there all night. It's been a lot of fun. Next week is the Bash at the Beach edition of Dynamite. I'll be back for a live stream. No live stream in 2 weeks because I'll be on the boat with Jericho. Now, they had a cruise last year. I didn't go on it, but I'm very curious because there's going to be a bar, right? There's going to be probably, I don't know if it's open bar for the wrestlers or not. I know it's not for us. Should take a look at some of these friggin' drink packages, but it'd be interesting if there's some drunk wrestlers running around this boat. If I have any interesting stories to tell when I get back from this cruise, I am most interested to see what is going to be happening on this ship. On the other hand, I'm also a little concerned because I'm going to be trapped for a week on a boat with a bunch of wrestling fans. So that could be really, really good or really, really bad. I don't know. Brian, thank you for the $2 super chat. Will AEW introduce the six-man tag team title? You know what? Part of me wants to say it wouldn't be a bad idea if they insist on having so many six-man tags, but then you got to make a choice. You can't have an individual singles secondary title and six-man titles. That's too much. So one or the other. Either have six-man titles or you have a secondary championship. I would not do both. So that's a decision for them to make. Let's take one last look at the poll here, AEW poll. 63 up, 37 down. And the NXT poll currently stands at 70, almost 78 up, and 22 down. So NXT, according to all of you, so far, is the clear winner. Don't forget, you can get a free audiobook on Audible with our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. There you see a Mayor Kane. You want to read all about Kane? You want to have Glenn Jacobs narrate his life story to you? Get the audiobook for free. All you got to do is use our link. Hornswoggle's got a book on there. Dylan Postal, right? Life is Short and So Am I. You can get all that. One free book of your choice. Use our link right now on Audible. Thank you, guys. Elsewhere on this channel is my top five listing of the wrestlers of the decade, which is been somewhat polarizing, especially my number one wrestler of the decade for WWE. I won't spoil it for you. You can find that elsewhere here on the channel. I have a 40-minute video up on that. And there'll be a brand new episode of the podcast going up this Sunday. That'll be the prediction show, episode 634. Ryan W., thank you. $5 super chat. Look, got super chats coming in. Fight me. How about Scott Steiner debuting on NWA Power this week? Well, I have not watched NWA Power yet, so thank you for that. I was going to watch it tomorrow morning. At least now I know what to expect. And I'm sure I will have some thoughts and comments on that this weekend. You know what, though? I'll say this. I haven't seen it yet. I have not seen it yet. And part of me is like, ugh, come on. You know, I mean, how old is Scott Steiner? In his mid-50s, at least. What could he even do at this point? But you know what? The NWA show, it's a different... I do grade it on a different scale. Because if you watch that show, it really isn't about the matches, right? They save their big matches for the pay-per-view. The week-to-week shows, the matches are like 2 minutes long, 4 minutes long. It really is a show that is all about personalities, promos, and angles. It's about Tim Storm or Nick Aldis. And I did hear Nick Aldis was awesome on the show this week, so I am really interested to go watch it tomorrow. That's really what the show is about. It's in that studio setting. Part of me thinks Scott Steiner in a studio setting on the microphone sounds fucking awesome. So I am very curious to see what kind of role he plays on the show. I don't need to see Scott Steiner in the ring wrestling at all. But if they want to trot him out there with Dave Marquez or Joe Galli or whoever and just put a microphone in his hand, how can I hate on that? How can I hate on that? That sounds awesome. That sounds exactly like the role that I would want Scott Steiner to have. Stay out of the ring and just cut promos all the time. So I might have some praise for this, depending on what they have him doing. So I'll have my NWA Power thoughts on Sunday as well. All the more reason to tune into the podcast. Give this video a thumbs up. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Appreciate all your love and support. And I will see you for a brand new episode of The Sound Off this weekend. Until then, take care, guys.